From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Healthcare reform is the single most important election-related issue for Americans. The vast majority of Americans dread a medical emergency, even when they are covered by a health insurance plan. It's no surprise that poll after poll shows strong and growing public support to expand the government-funded health plan for seniors called Medicare to all Americans. But the pull of the insurance lobby is strong, and both establishment Democrats and most Republicans strongly oppose moving to a Medicare for All system. At the recent Democratic presidential debate in Ohio, Senator Elizabeth Warren was challenged on how she would pay for such a plan, and her answers were vague. Senator Bernie Sanders, the strongest champion of such a system, admitted that taxes would have to be raised, but that they would be compensated for by zero costs for premiums, co-pays, and deductibles. My next guest, writing in the New York Times, says that we can have Medicare for All without even raising taxes. She is Lindsay Koshgarian, Research Director at National Priorities Project, a project of the Institute for Policy Studies, and a frequent guest to this program. Welcome back to the show, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So your op-ed in the New York Times was very well-timed, coming right as this debate happened, where the issue of Medicare for All became a huge talking point. And it generally does become a huge talking point, and generally from the perspective of how are we going to pay for it. So you wrote this piece called "We Don't Need to Raise Taxes to Have Medicare for All." Give me a brief summary of this. If we don't need to raise taxes, where will the approximately $33 trillion that some say Medicare for All will cost come from?
Well, Sonali, we're all used to hearing the argument that we can't afford big, important government programs because they're too expensive and we can't afford it. And the point of this piece is that that is not true at all. That's a complete myth. We have the resources to afford things like Medicare for All and a Green New Deal and other major programs if we use our resources appropriately. And what we pointed out in the New York Times was that in order to fund Medicare for All, as it's been put forward, to cover all Americans with full health insurance coverage, what you can do is use most of the funds come from healthcare spending that we're already making. The government already puts tremendous amounts of money into Medicare and Medicaid. We already put money from our employers, and employers get tax subsidies. So all of that money is already going towards healthcare, and that money would continue to go towards healthcare. But any additional costs could be covered either by raising taxes or, as we point out in the piece, we are spending hundreds of billions of dollars on the Pentagon, more than we need to spend and more than we've spent in the past. So what we suggest is that by cutting Pentagon spending back to just the levels that it was in the late 1990s, that we could raise enough money to cover the gap in funding for Medicare for All.
So let's go through some of these issues that you say we could cut from. It was amazing to actually see these words in the New York Times, tame the American war machine. So quite an achievement for you to even bring up this issue, because of course both parties so strongly, constantly try to outdo themselves in being pro-military. And you point out that we could get at least $300 billion by ending war funding and ending foreign military financing. Let's get into that a little bit. Is this, when you refer to this, you're talking about the money that we are currently spending on the wars that we are fighting?
That's right. We're still spending tens of billions of dollars every year on our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and now Syria and Yemen and all of the other places where American troops have been in combat in recent years. And then we're also funding not just our own troops and our own military to go into combat, but we consistently fund billions of dollars for other militaries. So we're giving military assistance to a number of countries. And that in turn tends to stoke conflicts and to give those countries more cause instead of less cause to engage in combat and conflict in their own regions.
You're not talking about foreign aid to non-military projects, because that's often, unfortunately, a target of a lot of administrations, especially right-wing administrations. You're talking about things like military funding for Israel's military and other sort of so-called allies who we support with funding. I mean, when we're talking about the impeachment inquiry right now, U.S. military aid to Ukraine is a huge central issue. That's the kind of military spending for foreign militaries you're talking about?
That's right. We're talking about only cutting aid that goes directly to other countries' militaries. And it might be surprising that we don't just fund our own military in the United States, but we fund the militaries of other countries. So we're not talking about cutting humanitarian aid. We're not talking about cutting health programs in other countries or economic development programs. We would leave all of those intact. And in fact, we would even use some of the excess funds that we're suggesting from Pentagon cuts to fund programs like that even more as an alternative to combat and an alternative to military solutions to problems which are not effective.
Then bringing troops home from the current wars that we are fighting and closing foreign military bases and all of the troops that are stationed at those bases, bringing them home, also saves giant boatloads of money.
That's right. We spend about $150 billion every year on maintaining foreign military installations around the world. The United States has about 800 of these foreign military installations, which is more than 90% of the world's foreign military installations run by any country. So these are really symbols of U.S. colonization. And what they are is left over from past military conflicts. So we still have tens of thousands of troops in places like Germany and Japan and South Korea. Essentially, once the United States comes into a place and establishes a military presence, we never leave. And our having these World War II military bases still open and very functioning is the same as if we were to still have military bases in Afghanistan in the year 2076.
So nuclear weapons programs, or at least the canceling the upgrade to nuclear weapons programs, is another aspect that you discuss in your op-ed about how we could pay for Medicare for all. And in general, trimming the Pentagon military budget, the Trump administration's so-called Space Force, this is Donald Trump's idea that he just sort of made up and is now unfortunately becoming a reality, as well as funding for his border wall, etc. All of these things add up to enough money that you say would help fund Medicare for all. Now, most Republicans and quite possibly a majority of Democrats would look at your op-ed and say, you are suggesting threatening our national security, the national security of the United States. How do you respond to that?
I would respond by saying that that's not true at all. Most of the money the Pentagon spends does not actually build up our national security. And in many cases, it actually makes our national security even worse, even more at risk. We all know that the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have not been a success by any measure. We know that our wars in Iraq have led to opening the space for ISIS to take root. And this is a pattern that goes on with U.S. military intervention over decades and around the world and in multiple places, that when the U.S. military steps in to try to fix a problem, more often than not, we make the problem worse. So all we're suggesting is that we stop that pattern. And we're also suggesting that we stop the pattern of subsidizing the mega corporations that are funded by our Pentagon budget. More than half of our Pentagon budget goes directly to corporate military contractors like Lockheed Martin. And those companies do not need the handouts. Their CEOs do not need taxpayer-funded $20 million salaries. And those are the places where we're talking about cutting funds that go to the Pentagon.
So President Trump has actually, in his rhetoric, almost alluded to such an approach, you know, talking about bringing troops home, ending the endless wars, made references to what some might characterize as the military-industrial complex. But in practice, it doesn't seem that he is in any way moving toward what you would suggest, right?
No, President Trump has not put his money where his mouth is on this issue. As you say, he's made lots of comments about ending endless war, and in particular has made comments about how crazy the Pentagon budget is. And yet, under his leadership, the Pentagon budget is only growing higher and higher. So he has not backed up his words with action. Of course, the one thing in the news recently regarding President Trump and ending endless war is his pulling U.S. troops out of Syria. What we know is that that action and the way that he conducted it has had terrible results on the ground in Syria, but that he, because he is carrying, of the way he carried this out, he's giving ending endless war a bad name, is still the right thing to do, even though in this instance it wasn't carried out appropriately.
We know now that those troops are not returning home. Many of them are going into Iraq. He's talked about sending troops to Saudi Arabia to protect them from Iran, and claimed that Saudi Arabia would be paying for 100% of the cost, which is strange given that then U.S. troops would really effectively be mercenaries. The Washington Post did an analysis on Monday or over the weekend showing that there was actually no evidence to suggest that Saudi Arabia was going to pay for U.S. troops to serve there. So certainly this idea of removing troops it sounds nice because that's what a lot of Americans want, right? But in practice, it's not happening.
That's right. He has sent troops into Saudi Arabia. He has had an administration that has continually been beating the drums of war for our relationship with Iran. So this is not a successful instance of bringing our troops home. What we would need to do to successfully bring our troops home would be to engage in lots of diplomacy. The United States has lots of other leverage in the world besides the strength of our military. But what has happened under Trump is that he's gutted the State Department so that we don't have the diplomats we would need in order to make those kinds of moves successfully in a humanitarian way. And he has sent troops into new places and has not brought them home in any serious numbers, which is very much a part of what we are calling for, is bringing home both our troops in combat, but also many of our troops who have been deployed endlessly year after year around the world, and puts a tremendous strain on the troops and on military families, and is just not necessary.
I want to turn to this whole discussion of raising taxes to pay for Medicare for All. At the Democratic debate in Ohio, as I mentioned, Senator Elizabeth Warren was asked how she would pay for the deal that she has backed, Medicare for All. And despite all of the very detailed plans that her campaign has released, it hasn't really been very specific on healthcare reform and Medicare for All. And during the debate, she repeatedly refused to use the word taxes. She kept saying our plan will lower costs. We're going to reduce costs. Now we have heard that her campaign is going to be releasing a plan to finance Medicare for All. And as I said, Bernie Sanders, on the other hand, didn't shy away from it, admitted that you would have to raise some taxes, but that they would still be, the overall cost would go down because it wouldn't be copays and deductibles. Some have said, well, this idea of raising taxes is a Republican talking point. We should turn it over on its head. And others have said, well, we shouldn't. We should take the Elizabeth Warren route and not give in to the fear mongering and simply avoid saying taxes. But don't we have our priorities skewed on what taxes mean to begin with, Lindsay? Because we have this attitude and we've been trained by politicians to consider taxes to be a bad thing. But taxes are just our money that are used to pay things for us. And if we look at it that way, then we can start to talk about what it is that those taxes are paying for and whether they really are for us, right?
Yes. Well, and Medicare for All is an interesting example because I wonder what would, I'm not aware of any polling that's done this, but I wonder if you asked Americans whether they were more fond of paying their taxes or paying their health insurance premiums. I'm not guessing that health insurance premiums would get a very high rating either.
Right.
And it's
Yeah.
important to remember that a lot of Medicare for All, if not all of it, according to many estimates, could be paid for just by moving the money from that we spend on healthcare currently and paying for it in a different way. So I think it's difficult to say whether, what candidates' messaging on this should be, but I think it's definitely true that in order to get the things done that we need to do as a country, we probably need to both raise taxes, especially on the wealthy and on corporations, and we also need to cut Pentagon spending because we do have a tremendous amount of resources. And I think it's important that our politicians recognize that we do have the resources to get done these things that they're saying that we need to get done, and they need to let us know as a country that that there's a real basis for how we could pay for these things.
So on the one hand, given that Bernie Sanders was more honest about where the money would come from, do you wish he had also said, but if we cut our military spending in all of these ways, we wouldn't even need to raise taxes?
Well, in fact, I'm part of a coalition called the People Over Pentagon Campaign that has asked all of the presidential candidates of both parties to support Pentagon cuts in order to pay for domestic needs like Medicare for All. And so far, none of those candidates have put out a clear plan to do that, but we have asked all of them to do that, and we will be watching.
I want to turn to Joe Biden's tweet after the Democratic debate. He said, let's put this in perspective. If you eliminate every single solitary soldier, tank, satellite, nuclear weapon, eliminate the Pentagon, and it would only pay for 4 months of Medicare for all. 4 months. Where did the other 8 months come from? Your paycheck. How do you respond to this?
Well, that's factually inaccurate. And actually, we worked on this piece well before Biden tweeted that. But it's factually inaccurate that cutting the entire Pentagon budget would only pay for 4 months of Medicare for All. That's only true if you consider the Pentagon funds to be the only source of funding for Medicare for All. But it just makes no sense to not consider our current spending on Medicare and Medicaid and other health programs to be a source of funding for Medicare for All. It's as if we're saying that we've cut the entire Pentagon to pay for Medicare for All, but we would still keep funneling those other trillions of dollars into the health insurance industry. So there's a factual problem with that comment, and something that is probably a bit complex for things like televised presidential debate or Twitter, but it's something that I hope that that the candidates will be able to explain as the debate on this topic goes on.
And just the fact that this came from Joe Biden, the one of the leading Democratic candidates for president, just goes to show how much enthusiasm there is from both parties to fight against Medicare for all, right? This is kind of sadly a bipartisan affair.
Yes, the idea that we don't have the resources and fear-mongering over the deficit and that sort of approach, this approach of scarcity, is something that's been a bipartisan effort and, so very much has been supporting a huge Pentagon budget and an ever-growing, ever bigger United States military. Both of those have been bipartisan, and both of those are things where we really need someone somewhere on the political spectrum to represent a different point of view.
Lindsay, I'm wondering how do we translate the idea that you lay out in your New York Times op-ed into reality? There is a lot of activism around Medicare for All. There's some activism around, in terms of the anti-war movement. But is there a movement, and how do we build a movement linking these issues?
Well, one way is by linking the issue of Pentagon spending to things like Medicare for All and a Green New Deal. We hear much more talk about raising taxes on corporations and the wealthy, and those are ideas that have been able to become somewhat mainstream. And we know that a majority of Americans and people across the political spectrum support higher taxes on the wealthy and corporations. And we're starting to make that same case for Pentagon spending. There was just a poll that came out that showed that a majority of Americans would support transitioning some Pentagon spending into domestic needs. And the more that we can show that there is a lot of money here that is not being put to good use, and that money could pay for programs that are popular and that people want, I think that'll help to make the case.
And it doesn't just all have to come from the military, or we could have that as an aim and even talk about other places, right? I mean, we have our revenue, our treasury being severely depleted from tax cuts to the wealthy. And I know this is an issue that you've talked about on this program before. As we talk about redirecting what our taxes fund, we can also simultaneously demand that corporations and wealthy Americans pay their fair share of taxes, because we have a point now where we've reached a point where working Americans are paying a higher tax rate than the wealthiest Americans.
Yes, raising taxes isn't just about raising revenue for the government, although obviously that's an important part of it. It's also about reducing the historically high levels of inequality that we're seeing, where we have billionaires on one end of the spectrum, and meanwhile, we have 40% of the United States population living either in poverty or one crisis away from poverty. There's no reason for that distribution of resources to stay the way it is. It does not reflect an accurate representation of those people's contributions to our society. So we can absolutely raise taxes on the wealthy and corporations and cut Pentagon spending at the same time.
Well, where can people find out more about the details that you lay out? In addition to your New York Times op-ed, you mentioned you're part of a coalition. Can you give out some websites where people can learn more?
Yes, the People Over Pentagon Coalition is a coalition that has asked presidential candidates to support shifting Pentagon spending to domestic priorities. And that website is peopleoverpentagon.org. And the website where you can find our New York Times article and other work from the National Priorities Project that I run is nationalpriorities.org.
That's peopleoverpentagon.org and nationalpriorities.org. And do you hope, Lindsay, in the next Democratic debate that some of your talking points from your New York Times op-ed make it into the mouths of the candidates?
That would be wonderful.
And certainly, I mean, we didn't even get to talk about the other moderates like Peter Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar, who, sound very eloquent, but whose opposition to Medicare for All is just as strong, if not stronger, than Joe Biden's, and who, you know, sound quite eloquent saying it. They're these sort of young and likable faces, but certainly are essentially towing the same line as the health insurance industry wants them to tow. But that's a matter for another conversation. Thank you so much, Lindsay. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Sonali.
Lindsay Koshgarian has been my guest. She's a research director at National Priorities Project, a project of the Institute for Policy Studies. She just wrote an article in the New York Times op-ed section about how to pay for Medicare. It's called We Don't Need to Raise Taxes to Have Medicare for All. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.